Let us run with patience. I hate to stop on that word because I don't like that word. Let us run with patience the race that is set before us. You're going to think I'm fairly cruel this morning, because if you were here Wednesday night, I taught on fasting, the biblical form of fasting, and I impressed upon all of us that we need to fast more often, not for dietary reasons and health reasons, though there's nothing wrong with that, but for biblical reasons. There's biblical reasons to fast. So we spent all day night, all Wednesday evening looking at fasting. Now we're going to talk about running. And probably half the church is going to quit Bible Baptist Church after this, saying, well, pastor's gotten on a health kick. Well, obviously I've not, so don't worry about that. But we're going to talk this morning about running. The Bible has a lot to say about running. And it compares our Christian life to a race. And I like this, let us run with patience. It's a slow race. It's a steady race. We are to have a consistent pace. We're not sprinters. It's not going to be over soon. And the question I'd like to impress upon your heart this morning is, will you run till the race is over? Because the longer you and I are saved, and the more we look about, we see many people throwing in the white towel. We see them excusing themselves from the race. They might have side cramps or shin splints, whatever it might be that they might claim, but they're dropping out of the race. And there's no benefit, there is no benefit whatsoever to dropping out of the race of this life for Jesus Christ. And every time I see someone drop out of the race, it breaks my heart. I'm not talking about just here at Bible Baptist Church. I'm talking about within Christianity, friends, family, whatever it might be. When you see someone just say, that's enough, I've gone as far as I can, I can't take it anymore, they drop out. Will you ever drop out? What would it take to make you drop out? We're going to look in the Bible this morning at some things that the devil has thrown some people's way, that's made them or tempted them to withdraw from the race. Notice some things here about this race in the Bible. Look, if you would, at 1 Corinthians chapter 9. 1 Corinthians chapter 9. We'll do a little bit of turning here as we begin. Well, actually, we're going to do turning all the time. 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Notice this. The Bible emphasizes this theme of our Christian life being a race. In 1 Corinthians chapter 9, and verse number 24, the Apostle Paul writes this, 1 Corinthians chapter 9, and verse number 24, notice this. Paul says, 1 Corinthians 9:24, know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize. So run that ye may obtain. The Bible compares our Christian life to a run, to a race. Now in the world, they run to finish first or second to get a great prize. We're not running against others. Ours is not a competitive race. Ours is a race against ourselves. Some of you that have done some running before, you run a certain distance, you want to better your previous time. You're not an elite runner. You're not looking to finish first or second necessarily. You're looking to do better than you did last time. And that's the way our Christian life is to be always improving, to be making some progress in our Christian life, to not be stale, to not be complacent, but to be putting one foot in front of the other. The Bible talks about walking. And then it compares our Christian life to running. We are to be making forward progress for the Lord Jesus Christ. It's sad to say that most of those Christians that quit the race go from running to walking, from walking to sitting, Psalm chapter 1, and from sitting to quitting. And it doesn't take long before they're completely out of the race. Paul said, know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth? So run, Christian, so run. You're never admonished to stop. You're never admonished to quit, but you're admonished to run. Look down at verse number 26. He says this, I therefore so run, Not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection. He said in verse 26, I therefore so run, not as uncertainly. God has given us some rules, some requirements for our race. There are guidelines for it. There are boundaries for it. And Paul says, I'll run within the limits of these boundaries. I'll run my race, not uncertainly, but with determination. I'm going to run. Can I challenge you this morning to be determined and tell God, God, I'm going to run this race until it's over. I'm going to run this race until it's done. I'm not a 100-yard dasher. I'm not a quarter-mile runner. I'm not even a marathoner. I'm going to go beyond. The Bible emphasizes this race. Look, if you would, at the book of Galatians, over a few pages, 1 and 2 Corinthians, and then Galatians chapter 5. Galatians chapter 5. Here's the problem that happens too often. Galatians chapter 5, verse number 7. Galatians chapter 5, verse number 7. Paul, in writing to the Corinthians, said, run, so run that you may obtain. He says to the Galatians in chapter 5 and verse 7, ye did run well. Notice that past tense. Ye did run well. Who did hinder you that you should not obey the truth? When we quit the race, when we throw in the towel, when we take off the shoes, it's because someone hindered us. We might point the finger at other believers. We might point it at other Christians. But the one that hindered us is not the human element. It's the supernatural element. It's the devil himself. Folks, we all, can I tell you this? Every single person in here has a reason to quit the race. Every person in here, if you've been saved any amount of time, you've got a legitimate, and let me put it this way, a legitimate excuse as why you shouldn't have to run the race anymore. People say all the time, the church is full of hypocrites. That's their excuse to quit the race. A Christian did me wrong. That's their excuse to quit the race. Can I tell you this? That's their excuse to quit the race. It's not the church. It's not the individual Christian. The reason that they stopped is because there was one who hindered them. And that one is the devil himself. You're going to have a reason. You're going to have an excuse, if you're looking for one, to quit the race. Back in 1984, some of you might remember this stuff, we had an Olympic runner named Mary Slaney. And she was the fastest woman in the world at the 1984 Olympics in Los Angeles. And yet in her running, in her heat, when she was the heavy favorite to win all of it, she got tripped up by a fellow runner. Someone with her, probably not intentionally, although that's been debated since 1984, whether it was on purpose or not. But the best runner, the fastest runner in the world, was tripped up by someone else that was in the race with her. And many a Christian has blamed another Christian for the reason they've tripped and fallen. I like the story of Eric Liddell. Some of you might have read the book that's back there, and he's the one that ran for Great Britain in the Olympics back in the 1930s, whatever year, the 4 years, whatever the Olympics were there. He ran a race. He was in a race that ran on Saturday because he would not run on the Sabbath day, and his prime race was on Sunday, so he refused to run it. So against all odds, he changed and ran a different event, a different distance that he'd never run before competitively. And he went out in Germany, he went out in that race, and he ran that. And he tripped and he fell. And everybody thought that's the end of him. But if you know the story, he got up, he got back in the race, and he won the gold medal in that event. Because though someone in his own group tripped him up, he didn't use that as an excuse to quit running. And he kept running. Can I challenge you this morning? Don't use an excuse to quit the race. There's going to be excuses. Everybody's going to have a reason. Well, this did me wrong, or that did me wrong, or God didn't do this, or what He should have, or something. There will be a reason. That one, the devil, will make sure you've got a reason. But it's not a reason, it's an excuse. Paul had to say to these Galatians, these young believers, ye did run well. Look, if you would, at Philippians two books after Galatians. Galatians, Ephesians, and Philippians. Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2, look down at verse number 16. Paul writing to the church at Philippi. He's written about running to the church at Corinth, the church at Galatia. Here in Philippians chapter 2, verse 16, he says, "Holding forth the word of life, that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I have not run in vain, neither labored in vain." Paul, again, talking about this race that we run. Said, folks, this race that you're running is not in vain. Sometimes it seems like you're running the wrong direction on the track, doesn't it? The world's all going the other way and you're running this certain direction. You think, why am I even bothering? Why am I even doing this? Paul says your labors are not in vain when they're in the Lord. Your running is not in vain. Keep running. Don't quit. Don't find an excuse. Don't find a reason. But run. He said, let us run with patience, the race that is set before us. That word patience there in Hebrews chapter 12 indicates that this is not a short sprint. Oh, when you first get saved, man, you're so full of zeal and excitement, you think you can run forever. But you find out after a little while, it gets exhausting. It gets tiring. You've got to pace yourself to a certain extent. You've got to remember you're not in this just for 100 yards or 200 yards or a quarter mile or even a marathon. You know, I think about those fellows, those little dinky guys that run those marathons. You know, don't even weigh 100 pounds. Well, they probably do, but it doesn't look like they do. They get out there and they just fly through that 5-minute miles for 26.2 miles. You look at that and think, how in the world can they do that? Well, And again, I'm not minimizing that. Don't misunderstand me. But you know what? They're running on flat roads. The Boston Marathon, the New York City Marathon, the Los Angeles Marathon. That course has been set out, and they know where they're going, and they know where the finish line is. They know at 26.2 miles. They know that that's end. The race is done there. They've got a smooth start. There are no potholes in those marathons. They make sure every hole is filled in. They make sure every crack in the pavement is covered over. They don't want anybody having any accidents, trippings, falling, no obstacle. It's a nice, flat, paved, comfortable surface, marked every so often so they know how much they've run, how much they got left to run. Now again, I'm not saying that makes it easy. But that's not the Christian life. In the Christian life, no one has filled in the potholes. No one has paved over the cracks. It's not a flat surface. It is a hard race. And yet Paul said, let us run with patience the race that is set before us. I'm preaching to the choir. You know this already. You've been saved for a while. It's not all smooth sailing. Remember when I signed up for the Marine Corps back in 1973, there was a big poster of a Marine Corps drill sergeant with his veins popping out of his neck and red face and yelling and screaming. And the slogan was, "We didn't promise you a rose garden." And when I got into basic training, I realized that sign was right. They didn't promise us a rose garden. When you got saved, the Lord did not say, "I will make your road flat." He did not say, "I'll fill in all the potholes." He did not say, "There will never be an obstacle in your path." What he said is, "Lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the world." What he said was, "I'll never leave thee, nor forsake thee." So run with patience the race that is set before us, verse 2, looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith. We're not looking for the tape across the finish line. We're not looking for the yellow cord that's across there, and that's our goal. We're not getting markers that tell us you've now passed the 2-mile point or the 5-mile point or the 10-mile. We have no markers. We don't know how long this race is going to last. If the Lord came back tonight, it would be over. That would be great. More than likely, you're going to run it to the day you die. Let us run with patience. How do we get through the obstacles? How do we get through the trials? Looking unto Jesus, the author, that's the guy that begins the writing, and the finisher, that's the guy at the end line, the author and the finisher of our faith. Why does someone quit the race? They're not looking at the author and the finisher of the faith. Why does somebody bail out at the halfway point? They're not looking unto Jesus. Can I challenge you this morning? It's going to be a tough life. It's going to be a hard run. Some days you're going to be exhausted. Some days you're going to feel a little bit stronger. But just keep running. Just keep going. There is no benefit in quitting. I want you to look in our Bible. That's the introduction, by the way. I want you to look here in Hebrews chapter 12, and I want you to see a key word. This is the key word to our race. I've kind of explained it and gone around it. Wherefore, seeing we are also compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Verse 2, here's our example. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who, all right, he was a runner of a race, who for the joy that was set before him, notice this word, endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. Verse 3, for consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest you be wearied and faint in your minds. The race is going to be long. But not only is it going to be long, it's going to be hard. Notice what it said twice in those two verses about Jesus. He endured. Who endured? We are in an endurance race. It is not a sprint. It is not a short run. It's when you got saved, it's as if you signed up to run this race until you die. To run this race until you see the joy that is set before you, which is the celestial city of heaven. Until then, run. Until then, continue running. Don't ever let it be said of you, he or she did run well. We all know Christian people that we can say of them, they did run well. Keep running. Endure the leg cramps. Endure the dehydration. Endure the shin splints. I'm talking about physical runners, obviously, right there. But just as they have those things that they have to overcome and run through, so you and I in our race are going to have to endure some things. Those things are the things I want you to look at with me here this morning. Turn, if you would, to 2 Timothy chapter 4. Back a few pages if you're in Hebrews. 2 Timothy chapter 4. If you're going to run this race for Jesus Christ, you're going to have to endure some things. It's not all going to be smooth sailing. Paul mentions these in 2 Timothy chapter 4. Verse number 5. He says to Timothy, but watch thou in all things, notice these next two words, endure afflictions. One of the things you're going to have to endure in this race is afflictions. It's interesting that Paul wrote that to Timothy, who is a young man that the Bible tells us in Timothy had stomach problems. He had health issues. You know, there are some folks that are more prone to sicknesses than others. I can look at my children. I can tell you if ever there was a flu bugger going around, I could tell you which ones would get it first. Because they just caught everything that came around. Paul is telling us that in this race for the Lord, in this race, we're going to have to endure some afflictions. You know, the problem is when we get around those folks that are my generation and older, when we get together, you know what we talk about? Our health problems. I remember the first time I met Brother Kinsey, Buster Kinsey, was down in Florida in 1987, 1988. I was 30. I was in my 19, I was 30, 31 years old at that time. Buster was probably 12 or 14, something like that. And I went down there for this missions conference, and I went into the fellowship hall where all the guys, all the preachers were meeting for lunch, and most of the preachers had 20 years on me. They were most of them in their 50s and their 60s. I was 31. And I sat in there for as long as I possibly could and heard them discussing their ailments and their physical problems and all those things that were going on, all their afflictions. And that's natural, that's normal once we get to that point of life. You wake up in the morning and it's not, is anything going to hurt? It's just, what hurts today? But I sat around with all those guys and heard them talking about, I was 31 years old. I said, I can't, I got to get out of here. I'm going to get sick if I stay here any longer. I went over to the RV that Buster and his family, his older brother Frank was with him, and I picked up those two guys and took them to the mall and went to the arcade. We played the rest of the day. Everything was fine after that. Afflictions are a natural part of this life. Whether they're physical afflictions, whether they're family afflictions, whether they're financial afflictions, whether they're fears for the future, we all have problems and things to worry about. Don't let those things become the thing that the devil uses to get us to quit the race. Don't quit the race. If I had a title for the message this morning, simply that. Pete, you can put that online now, all right? Don't quit the race. Yes, there's going to be afflictions. You're going to have to endure them. You're going to have to run through them. You're going to have to ignore them best you can. They're going to happen, but just keep running. Endure afflictions, he said. Notice he said that same thing back there in Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10 and verse number 32. Paul is writing to the Jews, the Hebrews, obviously. He says in Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 32, "But call to remembrance the former days in which after ye were illuminated." I like that. After you were illuminated. Can we apply that to self? After you were saved. After you saw the light. All right, the things that happened before you got saved, that just happened. But after you got saved, those things don't disappear. They don't change. "After you were illumined, ye endured a great fight of afflictions." The children of Israel got out of Egypt, but they sure faced a lot of problems as they were wandering through that wilderness. Hunger, thirst, things that caused them to murmur and to complain. They endured afflictions. Had they stopped anywhere in that 40-year journey and said, "That's it, we're done, we're not going any farther," they never would have got to Canaan. They never would have got to the promised land. Canaan's not a picture of heaven, by the way. It's a picture of the blessings of God. You want the blessings of God? Don't quit when you're wandering through the wilderness. Don't let your hunger and your thirst, your murmuring, complain, don't let those afflictions stop you from the race. They might discourage you. They are afflictions. But just keep going. Get to Canaan. Get to the blessings of God. Get to the provision of God in your life. Endure afflictions. He says in verse 33, "Partly whilst you were made a gazing stock, both by the reproaches and afflictions, and partly whilst you became companions of them that were so used." You're going to face affliction. The affliction will tempt you to quit the race. Don't let it get you. Don't let it stop you. Keep on running. Turn to Hebrews chapter 12. Here's the second thing that we are to endure in this race for the Lord. We're to endure afflictions. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse number 6. "For whom the Lord loveth, He chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom He receiveth." I don't like that verse. If I was a Bible translator, I'd take that verse out of the Bible. Not because it doesn't belong there, but because I don't like it. And that seems to be what they do anyways. "Whom the Lord loveth, He chasteneth, and scourgeth every son." He said in verse 10, "My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of Him." Nobody wants to be chastened. No child volunteers to be spanked. And I'm going to say this, but that sometimes they sure need it. I know that's not popular in our day. Oh, give them a timeout. No. Can I let loose here for a minute? Spank them. Saw something on some meme or something the other day. He said, the ones that we used to spank, now they just call brats. Or something along that line. I don't know what it is. The Lord chastens every son whom He receiveth. God has set the example. When we do wrong, He chastens us. I don't like chastening. I have been chastened by my father when I was small. I didn't like that. Not just because of the physical affliction that it caused, but because it caused my father to have to do that. That kind of disappointed me. And since I've been saved, I've been chastened by the Father. And it's not the chastening that bothers me so much as the fact that I put my father in a position where he had to chasten me. That disappoints me. That whatever I did or didn't do caused him to have to chasten me. But notice it says in verse 7, if ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? Along that race course of life, in the Christian life, there are boundaries. You can't go too far out this way. You can't go too far out that way. You've got to stay within the lanes. You're not allowed to get too close to this runner or that runner, forward or backward. There's all kinds of rules. You can't take off before the gun starts the race. And all. There's all kinds of rules about running. And if you don't run it right, it doesn't count. You have to run within the guidelines. God has given us some guidelines. We have to run within the guidelines. We have to be obedient to the Word of God. We're not free to choose our own course. I've been at races, cross-country races back in high school where somebody didn't know the course, and that guy, boy, he was the fast guy, and he took off running three-mile cross-country race, but he didn't know the course, and somewhere up there he took a wrong turn. He didn't come in first because he was way off wandering over there somewhere. He didn't know where the markings were. He did not run that race correctly. Paul said, I run not uncertainly. And because of that, he didn't finish first. He didn't finish the race. We have guidelines in our race. And I'm thankful that when we tend to get too far to the left or too far to the right, too far ahead or too far behind, God at first gently chastens us. And then the more we resist Him, the more harshly He chastens us. But thank God for His chastening. Thank God He didn't let us go. Well, let him go. We're going to endure chastening. Don't let the chastening make you quit. That's what a lot of people blame God for. God is sending some correction in their life and they don't like it. And so instead of yielding to the chastening or the correction, they blame God and they quit the race. You've never met anybody that's quit the race that had a legitimate reason to do it. Can I just give you that heads up? Because you run into them all the time. You run into people. Well, I used to go to church, but this or that. The minute you hear it, just in your mind, whether you want to tell them or not, you say there's no legitimate reason for quitting the race. You quit, and this is harsh, because you failed. You didn't run through the afflictions. You didn't run through the chastening. Look back in the Old Testament, the book of Esther. The book of Esther. Yes, I've got 9 of these and we're on number 3. Esther. Right before the book of Job, which is right before Psalms, if you're looking there, Psalms in the middle of the Bible. Job before that, Esther before that. Esther chapter 8. Not looking at the story per se, but the words here that fit into our narrative here this morning. Esther chapter 8, verse 6, Esther said these words, Esther 8, 6, for how can I endure to see the evil that shall come unto my people? Or how can I endure to see the destruction of my kindred. If you're going to run this race to the finish, you're going to have to endure afflictions, endure chastening. You're going to have to endure evil. She said, how can I endure to see the evil? Can I tell you, it's harder to... I've said this before, folks, in trying to temper our modern society. Everybody says, it's never been this bad before. Well, it's been bad before. But I'm almost getting to the point now where I'm joining the group that says, it's never been this bad before. We have never seen in human history the confusion that is in our society today. The confusion with gender identity. What a sad, sad thing. That we are now inflicting our children who don't even know how to decide whether to take a bath or not. Who can't decide, who aren't given the opportunities to decide whether they want to go to school or not. But they somehow have this innate ability to decide whether they're male or female or neither of the above, whether they're binary. And every time I read a newspaper and see what's going on in this world, I just say, this is an evil, evil world. I read something a week or 2 weeks ago about an actress, and I don't know if you're allowed to say actress. I'm not sure how the endings go on those. I have no idea what to say anymore, but it was, I can't say it was a female either, right? I'm going to say what I'm going to say. I don't care. It was a woman. She didn't look a lot like a woman, but it was supposed to be a woman. And she is in the entertainment industry of some kind, either Hollywood or singing or something. And she is leading this big push because she is upset about them having Emmys or Grammys for leading male actor, leading female actress. She wants these categories all done away with because it's not right to have different categories for different genders, because which one is she? She doesn't know. She had to be by the picture. She had to be old enough to know. But she didn't know. And so she's leading this push, and I read that stuff and I think, how confusing is that going to be for those millennials? Now, not even the millennials. We're below them now. Those younger people that are being influenced by all this stuff. All that's going on. And the confusion that's beginning. I saw another article about the LGBT. And okay, I know what that LGBT, I know what those are. Then they added the Q. Well, I knew what that was. But now they've added some that I didn't know they added yet, so I'm behind the times. It's the LGBTQIA+. They keep adding, and I don't even know what the I stands for, what the A stands for. You know what I'm saying? We live in an evil world. That's all there is to it. They're going to just keep adding these letters. And these letters are going to put more and more pressure on you and I as believers to join in on this thing. I pity school teachers in these days with the young kids come in and you're not allowed to say he or she. You've got to call them they. One person, singular person, but you've got to call them they because it has no designation to it. We live in a evil, it's more evil than it's ever been before. You know, when we went back in the 70s and they started talking about legalizing this same-sex thing, and preachers and those psychiatrists who had a little bit of sense said, we're opening a Pandora's box to something that we're not going to be able to call, we're not going to be able to stuff it back in there. Oh, no, 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 no. No, we just want freedom for men and women. That's all it's going to be. Is that all it's been? Look where we are right now. And in this present evil world, a lot of Christians get tripped up. A lot of them throw in the towel. A lot of them quit the race because they want to be accepted. They want to blend in. They want everything to be fine. And so now I get so discouraged. I get on Facebook and I've got family members and relatives that are Christians, at least they say they're Christians, and they're defending all kinds of perversion in the world. And it breaks my heart. And I'm thinking, how can you call yourself a Christian and believe the Bible And I read one of them, and they were calling people that believe the Bible and believe what the Bible says bad Christians. And those that will succumb to anything that's going on right now, good Christians. And they got it completely backwards. Run the race. You're going to have to run through some pretty wicked crowds. Pretty ungodly company. But you and I are racing, and those standing on the side, I'm thankful for Hebrews 12:1, and we're running out of time. I'm thankful for Hebrews 12:1, where it says, "Wherefore, seeing we are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses," those standing on the sidelines cheering us on, if it was this wicked world cheering us on, we're running the wrong race. If they're smiling at us, there's something wrong. It's not them that we're looking for their approval of, it's His great cloud of witnesses. And if I understand Hebrews 12 right, it's talking about all those in Hebrews chapter 11. Noah and Abel and Sarah and Abraham and Enoch. Those 16 names that are given there and the many unnamed people that have sacrificed their lives for their faith. And they're cheering us on. I don't know how that works, them watching from heaven, but they are cheering us on in this race. And they don't want to see us quit because of this present evil world. Keep running. You might have to run alone sometimes. You might feel like Elijah. I'm the only one. And the Lord will call you aside one time and say, "Hey, I got 7,000 more that haven't bowed the knee to Baal. You're not the only one running this race. You're not the only one in these wicked days. But it's getting hard to run. It's getting hard to endure. We need to endure evil." One more, that'll get me through the halfway point. 1 Peter chapter 2. After Hebrews, 1 Peter chapter 2. First Peter chapter 2, verse number 19. "For this is thankworthy," Peter said, "if a man for conscience' sake," or for conscience toward God, "endure grief, suffering wrongfully." A guy's out running a race. One of the contestants says he cheated. I remember I did some running when I was younger. I ran a race out in Koh Phi in Micronesia. And this was the first time ever. They'd never had a race out there before. And the sports director decided to set up this 5K race. And the Koh Phians, they had no idea what a 5K race was. They didn't know the rules. Back here it's pretty. And so I noticed I was running along pretty good at that time. In fact, I did win the prize. But I was buzzing along running this race and pretty good distance, because those people just didn't. They'd look at me. I'd used to get up in the morning at 6 in the morning. For break of day, I'd get up and go jogging, go running 3, 4, 5 miles. And they looked at me like I was insane. "Why are you getting up and sweating on purpose? Why are you getting up and doing something like that?" They just couldn't handle it. So this race, I was a pretty good distance ahead, and I thought, well, I could just breeze in. All of a sudden, this pickup truck goes by me with three guys in the back that all got numbers on them. They're contestants in the race. And they're riding in the back, and they go by me in the pickup truck and just wave like this as they're going on. Got to the finish line, there they were. Of course, the guys at the end knew what had happened, so it didn't matter. But see, sometimes they can cheat. Sometimes you can run not certainly. And sometimes you'll be accused of cheating when you're not. And the world will look at you and they'll give you grief over your Christian convictions. They'll give you grief over your Christian stand. And you will suffer wrongfully. Like I just said a minute ago, they said these are the good Christians or those are the bad Christians. No, you've got that completely backwards. But you won't convince our modern day Christianity which ones are right and which ones are wrong. They think if you're not the tolerant group, you're not the right ones. If you're not the permissive group, you're not the right ones. If you don't know Jesus loves everybody, you're not the right ones. If you don't know thou shalt not judge, you're not the right one. See, they've caught just little bits and pieces of enough Bible here and there to try to sell a bill of goods. And they will give grief to those that don't do it. They'll give grief to you for the way the church service is conducted. What do you mean you don't have screens? You don't have black lights? You don't have a praise team? Oh, yes, we do. His name is Pastor Braden. And the pianists that sit on the side. They'll give you grief over everything. Not just the world, but Christianity. And again, many have used that. Oh, which church is right? They all think this is right and that's right. And they'll use that as an excuse to quit the race. There is no legitimate excuse to quitting the race. When God saved your soul, He put you in a runner's outfit. A modest runner's outfit. But He put you in a runner's outfit. And He set you on the track. And He said, I'll meet you at the finish line. Looking unto Jesus, the author, He shot the gun, He got it started. And the finisher, He's waiting at the finish line. Run till you get there. Don't stop anywhere along the way. Jesus was our example. Looking unto Jesus, the author, who for the joy set before Him, endured the cross. He was willing to endure something in His race that you and I will never be called upon to endure. Something far greater than we could ever imagine. His death on Calvary's cross with the weight of the sins of the world upon His body, we cannot even begin to imagine that. And then we tell Him, well, I quit the race because so-and-so offended me. Doesn't that sound pretty lame? I quit the church because so-and-so didn't understand me. I quit it because there was hypocrisy, whatever the reason might be. Endure. Run the race until it's over. Now this verse I'll close with. It should be my closing verse after I give you the other 4 points or 5 points. But I got to give you the closing verse so you walk out and say, well, that was encouraging. The pastor told me I'm going to endure afflictions. I'm going to have chastening. I'm going to have grief. I'm going to have evil. Well, amen. Hallelujah. Here's the verse to close with. Let me look ahead in my notes so I find it. It's 3 pages over here. All right. 2 Timothy chapter 4. The Apostle Paul said, run the race that is set before you. Run with patience the race that is set before you. Paul endured afflictions. He endured grief. He endured chastening. He endured evil. And here's what he had to say at the end. 2 Timothy is his swan song, the end of his life, before he was martyred for the cause of Christ. And he said this in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse number 7. I have fought a good fight. Notice this. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Paul crossed the finish line. Paul didn't quit along the way. There's one point he says, well, verse number 10. For Demas hath forsaken me, having loved this present world. Demas quit the race halfway through. He said, this isn't worth it. I'm sacrificing too much. I'm not going to do this anymore. He quit the race. Demas, if he was saved, which he probably was, is in heaven. But he did not experience the blessings of God. And he'll not get this reward. Look at verse number 8. Verse 7, he said, I've fought a good fight. I've finished my course. I've kept the faith. Henceforth, because of that, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness. You know what happens when you finish the line? Cross the finish line, Christian? You get a crown of righteousness. Every Christian that crosses the finish line gets that crown. It's not just a participation award. But it's not just given to the first and second finishers. Everyone, notice it says, henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but unto them, to all them also, that love His appearing, that are looking to Jesus, the author and the finisher of their faith. Don't quit the race. Say, preacher, it's been hard. I'm going through hardship now. I understand that. I recognize that. I know that. Don't quit the race. What is quitting going to do? And so I've had a gut punch. The Lord's just allowed things to happen, or things have happened in my life. They're just taking the wind out of my sails. I understand that. Been there, done that. We'll be there again. We'll do that again. But don't quit the race. What good does it do to drift off the course and mingle in with the crowd instead of finishing the race and looking unto Jesus and receiving the crown of righteousness which the Lord will give to everyone that finishes at that day? Don't quit the race. Let's stand together this morning with our heads bowed and our eyes closed.